and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the wise guys, sitting here doing what we're supposed to do.
Being wise.
Being wise.
Hey, happy summer.
Is it summer?
Today is summer.
Oh, man, and
that's why it was clear yesterday.
What?
That's why it was clear weather yesterday and warm.
Oh, man, it was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had two days of sunshine
rain.
In spring.
I know we've had solid rain here in Oregon since April?
I was thinking since September, but
yeah. Well, there was quite a few days in between. That were nice.
Man, April. And
that was winter.
Yeah. But first day of summer, we're supposed to be in the 70s, 80s today. Woohoo!
And we're hitting 90 on the weekend.
90 on the weekend. My goodness. And, you know, we just want to welcome you to the Wise Guy Show, and we hope that you're having a sunny day today wherever you're at.
Even if there's cloud cover.
Even if it's cloud cover, maybe it's your duty to smile. Maybe it's your duty to question somebody. Maybe it's your duty to be a texter, you know, and say, hey, man, it's not the right thing to say. Maybe, do you have a duty? Do some of you have a duty that maybe you aren't aware of, you know? And what does that look like?
I think we do.
Yeah?
It's like Yeshua gave the command. He was asked by the Pharisees, Lord, what is the greatest of all commands? And he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength.
Is that a duty?
Kind of sounds like it.
It kind of sounds like it to me. And then the second one is like it.
Yeah.
Love your fellow man as yourself. Most people miss that. It's love your fellow man as yourself, which means you have to love yourself first.
What if I don't feel like it?
I don't have the desire for that sometimes.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
I think you guys need to rethink your position. Here's the creator of the universe telling you what he wants you to do.
So I say that, like, I don't know if I want to do it, and Tuck looks at me like,
I don't feel like I want to do it. You're hurting my feelings.
I don't care what your feelings are in this particular case.
Oh, I know, look at him.
But they're my feelings.
Feelings.
They are.
Nothing more than feelings. It's trying to... forget my
duty.
Duty of love.
Help me. Save me, guys.
You have a duty. It's our duty. I mean, Aaron and I were looking at each other. It's our duty to be here this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple interviews lined up. We were so excited, and we're going to bring those to you. And it has not panned out. It didn't pan out like it's supposed to. Don't you have some sort of movie line for that?
Well, probably, but I've been up for 5 hours already, and my head's not with me.
Yeah.
Eight hours of sleep in the last 2 days.
So we're going to talk about duty versus desire today. What is it? How does it affect your personal relationships? How does it affect your family? How does it affect your congregation? And we're going to use some scriptural texts in today from the Torah to find those questions out. What is duty? What is desire? And how do you decipher between those two? Are there scriptures that talk about it, and how can you apply it in your relationships?
Do you want some notes in history that duty could play into?
I always love history, man. You know me, I taught history for years. I love that stuff.
So if I said the name John Hinckley Jr., does that bring anything up to you?
He had a moral obligation to kill the leader of the free world.
No, that's not. No, he was trying to impress. He had a desire to impress Jodie Foster because he had watched Taxi Driver too many times.
Okay, I got it.
Taxi Driver, the movie, the not movie. Taxi, the show.
Okay. That's historical.
It is historical. Now, the jury had a duty there.
Yeah.
When they were sentenced him
to convict,
or they did not.
Wow,
he was found not guilty.
By what clause?
Yeah, but that was 40 years ago. What has he been doing for 40 years?
I haven't found that. I didn't dig that deep in. But the duty of the jury would have been to look at the evidence,
and decide,
right? And what they chose was that he was insane. He was not guilty because of insanity.
When did that declaration happen? Just recently?
Actually, on today, in 1982. He shot. The shooting was in March of the previous year, March 30. So it took almost a year before the trial and the decision came.
So instead of putting him in prison, they just put him in a mental ward.
Yeah.
You know, don't you have to be mentally off anyways to just murder someone? You know, I've always thought this was crazy. I mean,
you also have to be off to, you know, go try to impress Jodie Foster, but you know, that's a different story.
Totally. I mean, he's mentally off, period.
Yeah.
You know, but duty versus desire. Wow. Okay. What else you got?
Let's see, what else happened today? France defeated Spain, ending the Peninsular War in 1813, so that was way back.
That was a moral obligation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have one for you.
Okay.
I don't have the exact date on this, but you guys know Michelangelo.
The painter?
Yeah, the painter. Michelangelo?
Or were you talking about the
Michelangelo and Michelangelo?
Or do you mean?
What do you mean? It said it like Michelangelo, but it's Michelangelo.
Michelangelo.
Oh, Michelangelo.
Yeah.
But it's Michelangelo.
Yes.
All in one phrase. Word, yeah. Well, I took a breath between the middle.
So
you're confused.
But are you meaning the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
No.
He's meaning the guy who did the Sistine Chapel in Rome.
Yeah.
Oh, the actual Michelangelo. Yeah.
His father thought it was his duty to have his sons raise up to a proper career. He wanted them to be merchants, you know?
Mm.
And so whenever whenever Michelangelo did a painting, his father would beat him. His father would actually beat him because he thought that it was silly.
That was his chosen career.
Yeah. You shouldn't do this. But Michelangelo had a desire to paint, and his dad felt it was a moral obligation to stop him from painting. So here we had two conflicts.
Yeah,
his father felt it was his duty as father to raise him up in a career that would make money. But Michelangelo had a wish to paint. He had a desire to do something.
Yeah.
What do you do when the two come into conflict? I mean, that to me is...
I mean, you know, and the problem with trying to answer that question is we have history to look back on and see the full body of work of what made Michelangelo.
Yeah.
At least he didn't break his fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So maybe Michelangelo's desire became a duty. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he thought it was an obligation. Once he found out that he could do this, how do you put it aside?
Right.
I mean, how do you stop something? Once something is shown to you, how do you put it aside?
Yeah. Mm. And at what point does your desire also become your duty?
Okay, so define duty for us. What is it?
Well, if you're on South Park, it's a whole different meaning.
Yeah, right.
But I would say duty would be your moral obligation. Or the responsibility of your role. you know, if you're a father, it's, you know, raise your kids up, protect them.
It's a required action.
Right.
You know. The Father gave you, the Heavenly Father gave you as an earthly father, mm-hmm. a required action to raise your children appropriately.
Right.
And not anger them. That's actually found in Galatians. I don't know if you guys want to ever look that up.
No, we don't want to look that up.
You know, but...
You know, and if you're a police officer, your duty would be to protect and to serve the populace.
Yeah.
Even if your desire was, I'm going to go home and eat bonbons.
Right.
You know, no, the duty wins. I've got to show up and I've got to do
my job.
You got to
show up and do it. You know, speaking of which.
If you're a multi-purpose kind of guy, you'd have bonbons with.
Well, see, there you go.
Is Tuck kind of funny? No, you can't do that, Tuck. It's your moral obligation to set us right.
I was serious. Okay.
He's serious. We're talking about bonbons here.
That's right. Chocolate covered
charts. Gross. So. Speaking of duty, next week I got to go into jury duty. Notice how the two are put together, jury, duty. Well, if I didn't say it one breath, Tuck.
Well, those are two different words.
Oh, yeah.
Michelangelo
is not.
Although, I mean, maybe his last name was Angelo. We're never told that.
Hey, this is true.
Like
this is true.
Together, Michelangelo.
So I got one more history for you.
Uh-oh, okay.
On this day, June 21st, mm-hmm. 1788.
June 21st, 1788.
Yeah.
Okay.
U.S. Constitution was ratified today.
Speaking of Constitution, there is a moral obligation and a duty to protect the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Someone just did that here. Recently.
Yeah.
I just found out about a case in California. Do you know what that case is?
I'm guessing it's something against the golden child, Gavin Newsom.
Yes.
And I don't mean the golden child as in the movie with Eddie Murphy that was actually a good movie, but the golden child that, you know, needs to find a new place to live somewhere.
Well, we need some good news, and this is a good news.
Okay, good. Good.
California's Governor Newsom was trying to mandate that private companies put on an underrepresented group on a board. So take, for instance, if a board was found not to have...
If they were all white...
Well, no. All of in California, I dare you to find an all-white board. I mean, shoot.
Well, this is true.
But anyways, they wanted to mandate that you had to represent someone from a gay group or an LGBT group, you know, or an African American group or a women's group, and they had to be mandated. There had to be one person on your board that would represent.
That would represent
this group.
All of those or one of those.
Yes. All right, and or both. And Judicial Watch.
Okay.
Which is a group that feels that it's their duty, their moral obligation, mm-hmm. to fight things that are unconstitutional, took this to court. And they won.
Good.
April 6, 2022. And the judge was going, wait a minute. We're not supposed to profile people. We're not even supposed to go ahead you know, when someone applies to a job, we're not supposed to use discrimination when they're applying. And so the judge is going, but you guys are using discrimination here on picking.
To force a thing.
To force board members.
Yeah.
So based on gender, race, and religion, and belief. No, you're not going to do this.
You can't do it to exclude somebody, but you have to do it to include people.
That's right.
It's like, wait a minute.
It doesn't work. You know, so
it's not a two-way street here.
No, so look up your eyes upon the hill, people. Hopefully people are waking up and finding their duty to speak up. You know, this is really interesting for us to understand and to do. So let's break down this whole idea of duty and desire. Can we do that?
I think we probably should.
Yeah,
because it's our duty to.
It's our duty today to help us understand the difference. Tuck is diligently looking in scriptures. He's going to say something really wise pretty soon.
Probably not.
But desire is something that we long for or actually have a wish for. It's my desire to be, like you've always said, I wish I was wealthy. That's a good desire.
It's a nice desire.
Okay. But if I don't do anything to be wealthy, mm-hmm. then that desire falls away.
But see, it's my feelings, and so it should just happen.
Yeah, right.
I feel like I should have $20 million.
But,
so yeah. The government should just give it to me because I feel like I should have it.
Maybe that's the problem with our society today. We have a whole lot of desire and not much duty.
There's a lot of duty around.
Yeah. You know, we have all this desire going on, but there's a good side of desire. I mean, if I desire that my yard looks pretty, and that motivates me to go clean up my yard, right?
If it's used that way, sure.
Yeah. If I have, if my desire is to love my brother as myself, as Tuck said, that would motivate me to actually love my brother. If it's a duty to love my brother, will my brother pick up that I really don't love him, but I'm actually doing it as a duty and not as a desire?
Yeah.
See, follow the difference. I mean, it is my duty to love, mm-hmm. but if I come across as it being dutiful, will the person actually experience love that I'm loving? Answer.
Probably not.
No. So how do I change my desire?
You're only doing that because you have to. You don't want to. And that's the whole difference in duty and desire. I mean, it shouldn't be the only one, but it can morph into that. People take duty so seriously, and there's nothing wrong with duty. But when you take the want out of that duty, because it's like a Marine or a SEAL or, you know, somebody in the military that's doing something like that, and they love it. I mean, it is their duty. And there's nothing wrong with protecting your fellow man or your fellow woman. You take care of them because it's your duty. You excel at doing things like that. Want is there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you cannot say that it's only duty because there's wanting to perform correctly as far as how duty prescribes. Uh-huh. Want is there. It's part of the package.
Yeah, I don't want to go to jury duty, but it's a duty.
Yeah.
To help someone else get a fair trial.
Yeah.
So there is a desire that is in part of your duty because you want a society of laws.
Right.
So to have those laws, to propel that desire, there is a duty that comes along with that desire. But, you know, next week, your desire is to come here and do this show, mm-hmm. not go to jury duty. And so you're making this choice of, no, I have to say no to the desire of doing the radio show in place of my duty as an American, as somebody with that believes in a society of laws. I have to perform this other duty over my desire to get up early in the morning and go to a radio show.
So there's duties that maybe save a society, and there's duties that we sometimes view as relational. But if it's mm-hmm. relational only, I have to have desire. But you're telling me even on a society, I would have a desire for my society to be more moral. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it would be my duty to speak about morality.
Right.
Or to actually, you know, I'm so tired of all the complaining that happens, like on radio. They say how awful the world is, or how bad court decisions are or where the government's going. But no one is standing up and going, it's my duty to speak.
It's like looking at America as the greatest country in the world. Yeah, we've done a whole lot of bad. Mm-hmm. We've done a whole lot of negative things, but it's still far and away the best place to live in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
But it won't be if we don't stand up with a duty and say this.
Yeah.
Wow. Could that also apply to belief in Scripture? Is it your duty to support Scripture?
It would seem very, very correct.
I'm agreeing with Tuck here on this, and didn't mean to cut you off there.
No,
but
that's all right.
Yes, because we have a desire for Yahweh. Mm-hmm. And so because we have the desire for Yahweh, we have a duty to build that relationship. And the way we build that relationship is by being in the Word.
I just saw a lady. This is a California case again. Everything's happening in California.
I have a desire to vote out California.
Right. And this mother, runs across this problem. Her child is a young girl. She's prepubescent.
Okay.
That means she hasn't even hit puberty yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers in the classroom are trying to convince the girl, without parental approval, that she's transgender because she likes to throw the baseball and climbs trees.
Because no girl could ever do anything in sports as a girl.
Right. So they start meeting with her privately. Privately. Not letting the parents know. The girl comes home, eventually tells the mom, "Mom is irate."
As she should be.
Okay.
I'd be going to court.
Oh, she went to the board. They tried to set her down. She stood up, and it was a moral obligation to stop these teachers from trying to teach kids to transition.
Yeah.
That had no idea. She finally got an attorney. They've been unburying this case, and they're finding out that these teachers in California have been doing this behind parents' backs, holding private meetings with kids after school, telling the kids not to say anything to the parents, that is just between them and the kid.
Because they're actually the teacher's kids, it's not the parents' kids.
Unbelievable. I mean, this is something I would never dream of doing. You know, even when I was a teacher, I always tell, and the kids wanted a private meeting, I would say to them, "Look, you must talk to your parent. I'll talk to you if your parent kind of knows what we're talking about." "Oh, well, Mr. Betts, I'm not sure if I should yet." "Well, just, you know, let's get this out in the open."
Yeah.
And my door was always open. I'd have windows there in the door, okay? Always making sure the kids knew that this is what they had to do.
Yeah.
And is their obligation. But here we have this case that's coming around. And they've found countless other kids that this is happening to from the teachers. I mean, from kids that are now coming up. Well, because it was that mom's duty to protect her child, a moral obligation, she's finding the backbone to go to court with an attorney, stepping up and standing out, and now it's starting to break open about this underclass of teachers, a number of them, who've been doing this.
Wow.
And you're going, way to go, mama.
Yeah. Don't mess with Mama Bear. Yeah.
Don't mess with Mama. And this woman's on fire. I saw her on an interview with Laura Ingram. Ingram. Tuff, you should have corrected me.
I-N-G.
Yeah, thank you.
Ingraham. I mean, that's how it looks like it's spelled, but it's Ingram.
Don't separate the last name.
I'm just saying, it's spelled like Ingraham, but it's Ingram.
Ingram. Did I say that right, Tuck?
According to Laura.
The way she says it, at least, right?
I love this. But look this case up. You guys will be fascinated. And, you know, and I get this passion from a lot of people. Now they're finding their moral duty. What's happening to Disney? Remember? I mean, you
die.
Yeah.
Through the shadow of death into the light. listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Welcome back to the Three Wise Guys. We've been talking about desire versus duty. What was your first thought when I kind of brought that thought up this morning?
Well, I'm first trying to define those two terms. How, you know, exactly what do you put, what do you attribute to desire, what do you attribute to duty? And, I mean, first thing that always comes to mind for me, and I wasn't in the military, but duty is a military effort. You know, makes me think of them.
Mm-hmm.
And desire can be good. It's a strong motivator, but it's dangerous. You have to really curb your desires and not give in to all of them.
Yeah. I mean, I got a fast car. You've had a fast car in the past, and you know, our desire to have when we have these is to drive fast, like the car's made for, right?
Why would you have a fast car if you didn't drive it fast?
Exactly.
It's kind of pointless.
But the problem with that is we have a legal duty to operate the vehicle in a safe manner. And so those two at that point kind of go against each other.
Yeah. And something like that, if you truly wanted, you had a desire to drive fast, well, then work into going to a track and say, hey, how much does it cost me to rent your track for an hour? You know, and then drive as fast as you can for an hour. You know, and then you can take care of that. Get it out of your system for a time.
Well, or learn how to use your vehicle that way too, you know. Yeah. My brother, my dad and brother, ride motorcycles a lot. And, Dad grew up riding them and everything, and so then when my brother got old enough, he wanted to do the same thing. And so they got to go to a track. There's one up here near us, and they bring out these professional trainers and stuff like that, and you get to ride and everything. And so they go in every tape off all the lights and stuff, so you can't see what somebody else is doing. You have to watch how the motorcycle is working.
Right.
How it's moving and everything, to train you on good, safe operation.
Right.
And they had a few rules of how to do this stuff, and you could even ride on the back of one of the professionals. My dad was going, he was like, I'm really doing great here. You know, he's thinking, feeling real good about himself. And he kind of lays into the thing, and he's going around the corner, and all of a sudden, well, on the outside, here comes my brother on his motorcycle with the guy driving it on the outside. He's like, wow, these guys really know how to do it because they've learned how to do it. Yeah. You know, they put their skills in. And so now they feel like they have this duty to train everybody else on how to be safe.
And that's the thing is that most people, I mean, myself included, for a time, you know, when I got a fast car, out on the open road, I drove fast, and it was really exciting.
Yeah.
And then you put yourself in a situation to where all of a sudden you're going to have to react to a dangerous situation. And if you don't know what to do in that dangerous situation, you're likely going to put somebody at risk, including yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and so if I don't know what to do in a situation, I should not drive fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Rollins back now.
We are back now, and we're back on the air. We had a little bit of a problem there for a second. You guys went off the air for just a little bit.
Oh, well, shoot.
But we were
dropping some gems there.
I know, right? Pretty awesome. But we're still trying to reach our guest. Our guest.
Yes.
Come on, Tuck.
G-U-E-S-T, guest.
Thank you.
Get your tangled tongue upside back and talkwards.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like that.
We had promised you at the start of the show today that we are going to be using scripture to kind of define or help you define duty versus desire. Mm-hmm. And this always is amazing to me. You know, we had this guest lined up for you, and we're going, how come nothing's working? And then Aaron goes, well, I've been mulling this thought in my brain, mulling it over about duty and desire.
Mull. Over and over.
And we're going, but that's what the Torah section's about.
And I hadn't looked at it yet.
Yeah. And I've already, I looked through this, and I've already said, well, I'm getting ready to send off the notes for the newsletter. And I'm going, Aaron, that's right on target.
And then, yeah, you know me. I know.
Yeah. And then, well, anyways.
Nope. Completely accident.
So we have one of the first duties that's ever listed here. It's, well, there's a number of duties, but this is a pretty good duty. We're dealing with Moses in the wilderness, and he's sending off some spies to go into the land. Okay.
They had a duty to go and scope out these guys who they need to get past. They need,
obligation.
They're passing on their journey. These guys are in the way, so we need to go spy on them, find out who are they, what are their weaknesses, how can we get around them, how can we defeat them, whatever. So that was their duty.
Yeah, Israel had worked for a number of years to make it to the promised land, okay? Mm-hmm. And here they are, knocking on the doorsteps, okay? And anyways, we're going to look at this, and we're going to just read some of the signs here. And he says here, when Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, he said to them, go up there into Negev, then go up into the hill country.
What's your address?
And see what the land is like. This is in Numbers 13. Numbers 13, we're starting in verse 17 and 18. So go up there and take a look. Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How's the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So he's setting this out. Now, to me, this is fascinating for a number of reasons. Here's the first one. Did Yahweh already promise Israel this land?
Yes.
Did Yahweh tell them to go into the land?
Yes.
So why is Moses asking to check out the land? I mean, what would have happened if the land wasn't bountiful? Should they have gone into it?
Well, yes, because Yahweh told them to go into it.
Yeah. How many times have you been offered like a job or a career or a direction? And you know that Yahweh spoke to you to do it. But then you double check it out going, well, do I have a house to stay? will I make enough money going there?
Yeah, right.
Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
I mean, do we have an obligation to follow what Yahweh tells us to do, period, without setting up all these hooks or hinges? I'm going to go in if it feels okay. Or I'm going to go in if it's all right.
Yeah.
What would have happened if it wasn't all right? We have a text that just came in. And they're reminding me, yes, you're correct. They're first coming up to the land of Canaan. It wasn't years yet. I mean, it was kind of months they're coming up there.
Yeah.
But Moses wanted them to know about it because maybe he couldn't go in. Maybe Moses wanted to know about it because he couldn't go in. What does that mean?
Well, my guess would be that it was an unknown.
So he wants to be prepared?
Right. And so like, okay, what are we looking at? What are we facing here? We know we're supposed to go, you know, through these guys on our journey. But we've only heard about who these people are.
Okay,
let's take a look at them and find out what's going on.
You both need to go back to the beginning of chapter 13.
Right.
It opens up with the Lord, Yahweh, spoke to Moses saying, send men, they may spy out the land of Canaan.
So it's God's idea.
So it's God's idea.
Why?
He wants them to know. Well, this is another one of those instances where Yahweh is the creator. He's the one that does it all. Yet he still tells you, he's preparing you for your duty, for what you should do. And Yahweh's plan to send the people into the land, but he wants them aware. He wants them to go in. He wants them to go in and check out the land, check out the crops, check out the cities, check out the people, all that stuff. And so he's telling them straight up.
You know, and there's supposed to be someone from each tribe.
Yep. And so, leaders from each tribe. These are not just Joe Blows. They're sincere leaders.
So it's a representative leader.
Yep.
Okay. I always like this idea because a true representative is supposed to represent the tribe that you're from. Right?
Correct, Ron Wyden.
Who lives in New York. Who doesn't know anything about Oregon.
That's right.
Yeah, and still makes laws for us to follow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Squirrel.
Squirrel.
But you're right. And I think it's Yahweh was saying, okay, I'm trying to set up another reminder of both the dependence that they needed to have for Yahweh and that Yahweh was protecting them. Mm-hmm. So go look at these giant people.
They're going to be huge.
Go look at these people who are organized, who know how to fight, should just tear you guys to pieces. Go take a look at these people. Because I'm going to do something here.
Oh, I got it.
Right.
I'm about to do something here. So go take a look at it. Because I'm going to have you follow direction that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But, of course, you didn't say that part because that would be too easy. It was like, hey, go look how big these people are because I'm going to have you defeat them by walking around the thing. It's all going to tumble down and you guys just walk right in. No, you just go look at them.
We have another text that came in. It says, Yah prepares you to show you what you are to do.
Yeah.
If I go with what you just said, he's showing them the giants to know that they can't possibly defeat them themselves. So fasting, prayer, all those sorts of things is probably what you should maybe think about doing right now, Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Here, yes, this land is fertile. The grapes had to be carried out on shoulders. All right. So there's lots of food here, but there's also lots of giants. So you want it? Does your desire to have it? Yes. But it's going to be your duty to come before me, go spy out that land, and then start walking in faith. You know, I always think about prayer, fasting, and confession is kind of a common thread. The people would have had to confess that they could not beat these giants on their own.
Oh, sure. Okay. I get where you're going.
And because they'd have to confess that, then they'd have to step out in faith. Maybe Yah is showing them this to see what their faith is like right now. Can they handle going in?
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, several of them, 10 of them, came back and said, they're big, scary people, and I feel, like we can't take them on. We cannot do this.
When they returned and they gave the report to Moses in verse 29, they said, Amalek is living in the land of Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. Oh, my. Oh, my. All those ites. Okay. Wow. That's interesting because the Amalekites were the giants.
Amalek, thank you.
See, this is why Tuck's on the air with us.
Okay. But notice in verse 30, Caleb quiets the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession of it.
At once.
For we shall surely overcome. But the men who had gone up with him said,
we're not able to go up against the people, for they're too strong for us. That's weird.
But see, that's the key, is that even the 10 other wise people from the other tribes, besides Joshua and Caleb, they did not tell a lie. They were telling the truth.
Thank you.
But the fact of the matter is that they forgot who was going to fight the
right.
war, who was going to win the war.
Right.
That's Yahweh, period, not the Israelites.
We found in verse 33, they go and they said, there also we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak. We are like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight.
I like where you're going, Tuck. I mean, but these people just learned that Yahweh had sent them out of a land that had the largest, most proactive army in the world at the time.
And defeated them with, you know, a little tidal wave.
Yeah, right. And yet here they come up to this and they're going, well, wait a minute, this seems too awfully big for us.
If we go down further, in chapter 14, it says, the congregation lifted up their voices and they cried, and the people, they wept all night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and they said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we have died in this wilderness? Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little children, our little ones will become plunder.
Really?
How many times have they said this now?
weren't their wives and children plunder in Egypt? Your firstborn males are being thrown into the river.
Details. Whatever.
Whatever. And then they go, wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? So then they go, let us even appoint a leader and return to Egypt. So they're going to toss Moses and Aaron out. Right? Then Moses and Aaron fall on their faces in the presence of all the assembly. And then Joshua, the son of Nun, the son of say that for me, Tuck.
And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Yophaniah or Yephaniah.
Yeah, Yephaniah. Those who spied out the land, and they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of people with faith. The other people weren't in faith. So how does duty and desire line up with this, Aaron? What are you thinking?
First off, their duty was for the spies, go in and check it out.
Because God told them to.
That's what they're supposed to do. They did it. They fulfilled their initial duty of go check it out. They came back and reported. The desire, I think, for the 10 was self-preservation.
Or an easy victory.
Right. And they saw that, well, there's not going to be an easy victory. We can't do this, so we shouldn't go.
Wow.
Whereas Caleb and Joshua, their desire still was following Yahweh. And Yahweh said, this is where you guys are going. Follow me. And like, okay.
So their desire still lined up with duty.
Right. Whereas the other 10, the desire and the duty split on them, and they reverted back to self-preservation, not realizing that self-preservation in this circumstance actually was lined with Yahweh.
Wow. You know, it's... this whole thing's really fascinating to me because it's so us nowadays.
Yeah.
It's not an old story.
No.
Well, that's where we as leaders in our congregation have to truly remember is that when things start getting real serious, I mean, much more so than they are now,
mm-hmm.
is that it's not us doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's him doing everything. And that we as leaders have to back off and allow the Father to do his ministry, however that shakes out, however it comes out. We cannot take any credit. We cannot take any...
Is that called obedience, maybe?
So.
Because that just came in on a text again, too. Is this obedience?
Yeah.
Notice Joshua and Caleb stood in the gap between the people and Moses and Aaron. I thought that was another fascinating sense of duty as well.
Yeah.
You're not taking down our leader.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stand in the gap.
We believe, you know, our leader said, hey, this is it. Our leader got the message from Yahweh, mm-hmm. told us that's what we're supposed to do. We're here to say, hey, we can still do this. You guys back off over there.
The thing I always find so interesting in that when we read this every year is that Joshua and Caleb are representative of the whole nation of Israel,
mm-hmm.
Ephraim and Yehuda. And so that's essentially who Joshua and Caleb are representing. And so it's the whole tribe of Israel. That's how they're being presented.
Is it any wonder in Revelation we're told that there are two witnesses?
Yeah.
And is it any wonder that they line up with the two witnesses here in the Exodus? Is it any wonder?
Purely coincidence.
Oh, no, it's just by accident.
Purely coincidence, yeah.
And that we happen to be going to a new land
mm-hmm.
in Revelation, a new earth, a new leadership, and a new, but there's going to be the world around us telling us we can't possibly defeat the giants. I mean, think about it right now. I mean, all the government that's against us, it seems overwhelming, right?
Yeah. Well, you and I could not go take on the U.S. government.
No.
Couldn't do it. But if Yahweh said, Ron, Aaron,
do it.
Go.
Then
guess what?
It's a different story.
Something's going to happen.
Different story. You know, and I find it fascinating that there's two witnesses that stand in the gap between Moses and Aaron, who are righteous,
mm-hmm.
and the unrighteous of the land of Canaan. Don't you find it fascinating that there's two witnesses that will be standing in the gap between the unrighteousness of the world and the great multitude that's righteous?
Yeah.
The pictures are phenomenal.
The other thing that's kind of interesting is when that happened, both Moses and Aaron humbled themselves and said, Yahweh, don't listen to them. Please save them despite what they're saying.
Don't kill us.
Don't you love these guys? I mean, never in Numbers or Exodus do I find Moses or Aaron saying, we are the leader. You must follow.
Yeah.
They're always falling on their face.
Yep. Say it. Because they know they're going to have humility.
To win the argument.
As leaders to win the argument.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that their people are not representing humility. They, as leaders, have to.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I just love this.
Yeah. So, I mean, stop and look at all the different positions you've ever been in your life that required a certain attitude from you.
Yeah.
And looking backwards, you can always see your hindsight is really good, you know,
mm-hmm.
and near perfect most of the time. And God, if I'd had a little bit more humility, then it would have gotten much better.
Yeah. I would have done that thing differently or not at all.
let's go with Aaron's thought about modern day that if Yahweh called just two of us and said, go. Let's see how it lines up with the old, because Joshua and Caleb stand up against. Notice what they say in verse 9 of chapter 14 in Numbers. They warn the people of Israel, do not rebel against Yahweh. Do not fear the people of the land, for they are our prey.
That's a bold statement right there.
They're our prey. These giants will be our prey.
Roland, could you stand up and say that about, I'm taking on Joe Biden?
I know, right?
here's a quote for you.
Hang on. We'll be right back.
Welcome back back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. His kingdom, his people, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys. We're talking about duty and desire. We're looking at the story of Israel coming into the Promised Land and the two spies, Joshua and Caleb, that stood up for Moses and Aaron and trying to convince the people to put the armor of faith on and move forward. And right before the break, we are talking about in chapter 14, verse 9, where Joshua warns Israel, "Do not rebel against Yahweh. Do not fear the people of the land, for they shall be our prey. And their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." And Tuck was just beginning to say some cool stuff here right at the break. So, Tuck, what did you find out over there?
Well, I'm reading verse 9. "Only do not rebel against Yahweh, neither be afraid of the people of the land. For their conquest will be as easy as eating bread. Their strength has left them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not." All right, and then there's an asterisk on that comment about eating bread. In Aramaic, when a task is simple or easy, it is said it is like eating bread.
Mm-hmm.
Stop and think about that. Even if you're not hungry, it's real simple to eat a piece of bread.
It all depends on the kind of bread, because I've had some bread that's not raw that easy to eat.
That's right. But generally speaking.
Right.
You know, and so it's as easy as eating bread. So it's like the conquest that these people are scared of. Again, it comes all the way back to, you know, what kind of faith do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh said he's going to fight the fight. He's going to be victorious in his process. And we just have to have faith in him and believe him.
That he's going to do it for us.
He's going to do it, yeah.
Right.
So that's where we all will be one day in the future, or what we call the future, when it's, you know, whether it's determined as part of the final exodus or something along that line. He's going to win the war. He's going to win the battle. And we're not going to do anything other than believe in him.
Just show up and be there, yeah.
Notice what the people did after this nice speech, okay?
They sat back in their recliner and just chilled and said, "Yep, go do it. You do it."
Yeah. Or, "Hey, we'll go along." Or, "No, they did not." All the congregation said to stone them with stones. Is that... remind you of anything that we've had to experience over the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Yelling and screaming, people prostrating themselves, covering their ears.
Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. I'm not going to listen to you.
You see those young teenage girls who actually went in and they went to Amy Coney Barrett's house and they wore white, taped their mouths shut, held babies out by their crotches, and they showed blood coming all the way down their legs.
Yeah.
Just complete insanity,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they were throwing things at Amy Coney Barrett's house. I mean, this is insanity.
Never mind all of the laws of the land that they've broken doing so.
Yeah.
But, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Well, this is insanity. But
it's their feelings.
I know.
She hurt their feelings.
Wow.
See, and they, she interrupted their desire
to kill babies.
Let's see if we can pick this up another way. Let's see if we got them. Hey, good morning. Are you there with us?
Hey, you guys have been having some technical difficulties. I think
we've been having major technical difficulties.
It happens. No worries. Can you see me okay? Are you see where I'm at? And I tried two different accounts just to be sure something wasn't glitching. This account seems to be working.
We got you. It's so good to hear from you, Kyan, and we see your picture, and what a blessing, all right? And we've been talking this morning about duty versus desire, and I think you're the perfect person to talk to because you have been doing a duty with the Aliyah Return Center. And tell us who you are and what you do, because this is fascinating.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. So you can hear me okay. That is wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad this worked out. So we've officially begun. Okay. Yeah, I would love to share. Also, even just to bring up that I wasn't born in Israel. I was, however, born in the United States, came as a young child. We were reading the prophecies about Aliyah. That word, of course, is to ascend, to fulfill the promises of the promised land. And as a Jewish family, there's these promises, 700 of them to be exact, in the Bible. And I know for many Christians, they may have been to Sunday school, 1,000 sermons, but then there's this issue where they haven't heard the word Aliyah or know even one of 700 scriptures to save their life. And so I thought, you know, it'd be amazing to find out myself, is this true? Is God really calling our family to come to Israel? And I talked to my dad, and he said, absolutely. Ezekiel 39 says all Jewish people will return. Isaiah 49 says the nations will carry the Jewish people home in their arms and on their shoulders. So there's many scriptures, again, 700 a lot. Well, I'm not going to quote them all now. but I just said, is that for real? Like, why would we leave America? I was born in America. Why would we go to the Middle East? Essentially, there I have to serve in the army, conscription. I have to learn a different language. I have to, you know, in what is it called? Integrate, absorb, attach myself, integrate into a new culture, a Middle Eastern culture, essentially, and an ancient culture dates back to the Bible. And so back to Abraham, 4,000-year-old culture. So what do I do, and how is this even possible? So I talked to my dad. I said, you know, what do you think? He said, we want to ask for a sign from God. But in retrospect, we didn't need a sign from God because there's already 700 signs that I just mentioned called the Aliyah scriptures, which are beautiful. And they're all part of preparing for Yeshua's return. And in retrospect, again, I've noticed that there are many, many, many Christian heroes of the faith who have been teaching this, like Spurgeon, like Lord Shaftesbury, like Blackstone, like even people like Martin Luther before he turned against Israel. Many people like this have been teaching the Aliyah scriptures and how this is a preparation of Yeshua's return. It's a promise that as the nations fulfill their sheep status, you know, test. They pass their sheep status test, and they are proving themselves to not be the goat nations, but the sheep nations, as it relates to the helping of the Jewish people to return, as opposed to, you know, the Cyrus versus the Haman. Cyrus versus the Haman choice here for Persia. There was a Cyrus and there was a Haman in Persia, Iran. Today they're choosing the Haman choice today. And so long story short, I said, let's ask for a sign. My dad says, all right, let's ask for a sign. Let's let God choose what sign. I was going to go get an actual fleece, an actual, you know, lanolin, sheep's wool. I was going to go and lay it out, see if it gets wet or dry or vice versa. And then quickly I came to realize something very interesting that truly we don't need to do the fleece. Let's just let God lead. So we go to our meeting, our local congregation. In walks a man with long white hair, long white beard. His name is Zebulun. And he says, look, I'm not from around here, but I came with a sign from God for this family, 8 of you guys, and it's an Aliyah sign. Huh. We're like, who knows the word Aliyah in America? Very interesting. Very interesting. And which means that return, that fulfilling of the return to the promised land. And so we're like, well, what you got? What's this sign you got? Is it like sheep's wool? What are you doing? He says, I'm going to just do it in front of everybody because this is very embarrassing or very, you know. So we're like, okay. My dad comes to the front. He said, can you hold out your hands? My dad holds out his hands. We're a Jewish family. And he says, for this family, I want to give you Aliyah gold. And I remember thinking as a young kid, 14 years old, what is he talking about? What's Aliyah gold? And he pulls out of his pocket these gold coins, hands it to my dad in front of everybody. And my dad said, that's it. It's like what happened out of, you know, Persia/Babylon, because Cyrus took over Babylon, you know, and they gave Cyrus raised, you know, out of him and 127 provinces under his world empire of the ancient world gave gold and silver. I mean, there was Egypt, back to Egypt. There was the gold and silver back even before that with the for the Aliyah, which they then took and made the tabernacle and stuff. We made the tabernacle. We did all this amazing stuff. But I remember saying, man, Aliyah gold? What? That's crazy. So my dad said, we're selling everything. And this is now like about a quarter of a century ago. And here we are. And there's lots more to tell. What are your names?
Oh, well, you're talking with Rollin and Aaron and Tuck.
And
wow.
Right now, hang on just a minute. We're having some radio silence. So we've got to make sure that we can get you back on. So just hang on just a moment.
Okay.
And if I lose you, maybe I can call you back on this.
Yeah. So now we got the right thing that works, so that's great.
For some reason, we're just having trouble getting connected over to your spot.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Okay.
I'm going to get a hold of a tech person here real quick. Hang on tight.
Should I hang up and reconnect and see if that works? I
mean, not at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, not at the moment. Just, you know, and if people get to hear our conversation right now about technology, it's okay. Because we will edit this out.
And it wouldn't be the first time, and it's not going to be the last.
We finally
love it.
It tells me that we're on. Awesome. Perfect.
Okay, I love
it. We're back on, Kaim. Thanks.
Praise God.
Yeah. Yay. So, Kaim, tell us a little bit about what it's like over there. You know, we always hear these reports about Israel being pretty messed up. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if I'd ever want to go back over there again myself with the lockdowns and things that have happened. And
tell us
current situation there.
Oh, well, for as of just straight right now today, and I can talk about history or I can talk about even last year, but as of right now, there are no restrictions to come to Israel at all and haven't been since a few months. That means no COVID test, no nasal swab, no nothing. You just get on a plane, you come here. For anyone, citizen, non-citizen, it's fully open for people to discover God's beautiful plan for not only the end times, but for these times, which might be the end times, and to discover their role in it and their plan and purpose as it relates to where it all culminates, where it all comes together, which is right here in Israel. So there's no restrictions. Everything's all the stores. No one has to wear masks. No one has to do nothing. But I'll quickly go back to last year and even the beginning of this year, there was some serious restrictions. Now, some people in Israel, quite a few, thought there was something a little hokey about that pokey.
Mm-hmm.
And some people said, I'm turning myself around on this one.
Yeah.
Whereas these are my jokes. I know.
I love it. Keep it going, man.
Okay. Other people said, well, Fauci, ouchie, all, you know, three times a charm or four times a charm or 10 times a half dozen, whatever. So they were doing this, some other groups were really, really trying to be dominating and pushy on that. So even the believer community, because there's Jewish believers too, wow, who believe in the Messiah of Israel, who was and is and is to come. And so some division was even in that community. They wasn't a total unity. But, you know, the jab from the Wuhan lab was a something that kind of turned people off from coming here because of the amount of push that Netanyahu, as much as I love him and wish for him to be here right now, instead of now the government's collapsing again. Bennett's government is again, it was notified to us as of right now, the current government with Bennett, Naftali Bennett, who was studied in America. He seems to be a bright young man. He seems to be fairly nice, but he can't hold together a country under a lot of spiritual oppression and a lot of, you know, physical oppression in the Middle East without huge reserves of money to just print and calm everybody down. So it's a little different scene than maybe in other Western countries. But point is, everything's open.
The same scene. Except ours is just old and feeble, but you have young and inexperienced.
There you go. There you go.
No, it's all jokes.
These are all the same. It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. And you know what it is? The enemy, like, I pity anyone. Like, I've studied government diplomacy, strategy, history of the Middle East. I thought I'd be the next ambassador. And I am the next ambassador in the spiritual, like, doing more than an ambassador could do with the Aliyah Return Center charity, helping the poor, teaching and training young interns from around the world with our school and our ambassador academy and so on.
Hang on. Because this is what I think people need to hear about. What exactly does Return Center do? I mean, that's amazing stuff.
Oh, yeah. So praise the Lord. Well, so I didn't just make Aliyah or immigration here. And then when I came here, I realized, man, it's a little bit hard to live here. You got to go to the army. The black hats are the only ones that will approve any marriage here. Oh, wow. It's not the same as America. It's kind of like America, but it's different. And everyone has to serve in the army. And wait, I have to learn Hebrew or I can't. How do I even sign a rental agreement for an apartment? What do I do? Oh, my goodness. And that's what's called Aliyah. Aliyah doesn't end when you get on a plane and fly into the sunset and some mood music. It's literally now I got to live here. I got to serve in the army. I've got to get a job somehow. And that's where a lot of people get depressed, lonely, a little bit sad. They need a little hug, a little smile. Who knows? Maybe some food, clothing, shelter, Hebrew school, and learn how to fish in the Galilee. And I'm not talking about actually fishing, actually in the Galilee, but fishing meaning like get a job in the Galilee. And maybe it's fishing. Maybe fishing isn't. Who knows? But so long story short, I was a carpenter at age 30. Which is kind of like Yeshua, Jesus, which is interesting, interesting parallel. But age 30, I was like, you know what? I don't want to just be a carpenter. I want to do something that actually helps Israel. I came here with a heart to help. If I was just going to make money on carpentry, I would have probably built a whole bunch of houses in like Miami or because we were the wandering Jews and we built houses. We would travel all over Canada, all over U.S. We traveled a lot. Oldest brother, born in Blue Island, Illinois. I was born in Corvallis, Oregon. Other brother born in Toronto, Canada. Other sister, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Other brother, Alliance, Ohio. Other sister, Philadelphia. Wow. So we're kind of a big family, kind of well-traveled. Had never been on a plane when we made Aliyah. But I said, I want to do something for Israel. I believe God's calling us to bless Israel, to be a light, to be part of the great redemption promise and the outpour of God's spirit on all flesh. Young people are going to dream dreams and old people will – no. Young people will prophesy, old people dream dreams. And so long story short, I met my wife at a fire. I was doing a worship event at a bonfire. Mm-hmm. And she showed up and she said, I said, what do you do? And she said, I actually work for free. It's called volunteering. I was like, oh, I've heard of it. I've heard of it. I've never experienced it. But I said, yeah, and I'm here to bless Israel. I know. She said, I'm here to be a blessing to Israel. I was like, well, why would you do that? Why don't you like work in Africa? Oh, did I lose you guys at all?
No, we're still here.
Oh, you're still there. Okay. Why don't you do that in like Africa or something? And she says, well, I read the prophecies about Aliyah. I was like, are you some sort of like pastor's daughter or whatever? She said, well, no, my dad runs a ministry that helps the Jewish people to return for like 30 years. He's been doing this, helping them to come back home, and that's it. But the problem is they come here and they're so lost when they get here, they just leave. And or commit suicide, some of them, which is extremely horrible. That's the worst case. Yeah, I mean, it's like you're dropped into a very harsh environment with a lot of loud, crazy people all jacked up on caffeine. And And you're like, well, what do I do here? How do I, I'm in the army, Syrians are shooting at me. Then I come home and I got no family here. And it's like a whirlwind of, that's the real Israel. It's not as easy as, it's not flying to a plane and to the sunset. Sure, there's a lot of technology. Sure, there's a lot of, but there's a lot of hardships and things don't work as smoothly as they do in America. Things, it's like you fight, it's almost like Africa or any country, you know, India, but it has a disguise of a first world country because of the amount of inventions, more than all of Europe. Obviously, everyone knows we have more inventions than the entire Europe, more unicorns, which is a billion-dollar company idea that goes to the stock market with $1 billion to start out. And that's like so many, I don't know, 48, so, 49, yeah.
So, Chaim, mostly what I'm hearing from you is that in order to return to Israel, it's your duty to learn the language and work within the army. And it's, God has given you a duty. And that is to help people make the transition. That's what's done through the Return Center. Is that correct?
Yeah, Aliyah Return Center, yes. But we are essentially just the hands and feet of Yeshua for all the nations, because the nations, including America, if you're in America, you would be a coastland, which it talks about it in Isaiah 49, verse 1. Listen, O coastlands, lands afar off from Israel. Listen to the word of the Lord. Verse 22, you will carry the Jewish people in their arms and bring them back home. Jeremiah says, you know, plant them in the land. I will plant them in the land with all my heart, all my soul in the promised land. And that's what I'm seeing that God wants as a preparation for him to return. Because, you know, there's three prerequisites of the return of Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah, to this earth.
Okay.
Without going into a big theological thing, there are definitely three prerequisites. One is, of course, the bride has to prepare herself white garments, which are works. Now, obviously, we're not saved by works. We're saved by grace through faith in Yeshua. But it does say white garments are the righteous acts of the saints. So the bride has to prepare herself and be ready, be pure, come together. And that's something that is amazing that's happening through worship, through prayer and initiatives throughout the world. Another one is this gospel must be preached to all the nations. So that's number two. Mm-hmm. Preached to all the nations. And there's people, Daniel Kalenda, Christ for All Nations, and there's this and there's that and there's the other that is doing that. The one that I feel that I'm talking about now with Hebrew Nation is the Hebrew Nation. And this is another prerequisite that I think a lot of people maybe are missing out on this one, which he says he's weeping. Yeshua wept over Lazarus, right? And he's like, my buddy Lazarus, I love him. And then he had to say, I just got this revelation today. He had to say, Lazarus, come forth. Because if he just said, come forth, O dead person, maybe with the amount of power he has, every dead person of all of history might have just been like, oh, that's my time. Let's get out. He has so much power.
Yeah.
He's the Messiah, the creator of all atoms and all, you know, matter. So it's like, boom, he had to specify, this time I'm only calling for one dead person, easy peasy.
Hey, Tony.
Uh-huh.
We're coming right up to our break. Do you have a few minutes to hang on? So you're going to hear some news and that kind of stuff. Are you able to hang on and let's bring
you
back? Okay.
Absolutely. How much time after that?
So then stay on and don't disconnect, and we'll bring you on. And we need to share people how they can reach out to you.
Okay.
How they can donate and how they can be a part of what you do.
Absolutely. We'll do it. How much time should I give?
We got a few seconds left, so give them your website now and that sort of stuff. And then as soon as you hear the music, we're going to be off.
Okay. Love it. Okay. Yeah. So we're in a great restoration of all things. So we are Aliyah Return Center. That's spelled Aliyah, A-L-Y-I-A-H, Aliyah. So that's A-L-Y-A-H, returncenter.com. That's our website. So A-L-I-Y-A-H, returncenter.com. And you go there and you'll see ways to volunteer and to come and to be part of the adventure as this time.
Hey, hang on tight. We'll be right back.
Okay.
listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the nations.
Return center, and if you're hearing a little bit of wind, that's holy wind. It's coming over
it
the land of Israel. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Pentecost wind.
Chaim, we're so glad to have you on with us. And just before the break, you had told us that volunteers can come to the return center. Could that be any sort of volunteer?
Yes. I mean, our oldest right now are young at heart. There's young and there's young at heart. And that is 80. I think he's 82. But long story short, we have a internship. We call it an internship because people come on their tourist visa. So it's important to remember it's a tourist visa. We have beds for people to stay in. We have archaeological digs to go on. We have the Bible really comes to life in a way that people just need when they're before. Some people just wait till the end of their life to scratch something off a bucket list. But we say, come on, even the young and the young at heart together, come. And we what we do is we have a program for a whole month where people don't have to be herded like cattle onto a bus. Now we do have trips and we do have stuff, but they're like locals, you know, and they get to bless and help all kinds of people in need.
Well, that's awesome. We actually have a young lady from our fellowship that's heading over that way here in July. And I'm not sure if she's at the return center, but with a family that has been connected with you. I probably shouldn't give those names over the air, but she's pretty excited. Okay. You know, she's pretty excited.
We've seen people's lives completely change. I mean, they come in one way and suddenly they're like, well, is this actually where King David chose these five stones? This is actually where Jesus walked. Is this, wow, where he chose his disciples? Now, I'm not only seeing the history, but I get to be part of the present day, what God is doing today. And that a lot of people miss that. They only look to the past and they don't know that they can be part of what's going on today. And also part of the prophetic unfolding of the future as this timeline culminates, called Earth. And so what do we need to be? We need to be connected with Israel and connected with what God's doing here, meeting the leaders. We work, of course, with the government, with the Ministry of Aliyah, Ministry of Absorption, Ministry of Welfare, and the Army, and so on. We have Lone Soldier House. We've got clothing distribution. A lot of stuff to help with while learning, while going through our syllabus, while going through our school. There's a lot to help with. Archaeological digs. We got our group coming in a few days from French-speaking Canada, and they are going to be going – they're on national news uncovering Mary Magdalene's – more of Mary Magdalene's life and her home. And, you know, there's not a lot of songs about Mary Magdalene and who she was. Some people thought she might be a woman of ill repute. Others said, no, she wasn't. And there was a confusion. It's good to uncover some of this history. And they're doing that along with helping the Holocaust survivors and helping the new immigrants with no place to go. They're coming here from all over the world.
Well, so give us an insight of what the spiritual condition is like in Israel right now. You know, we know there's a huge battle going over there in the moral section. Tel Aviv seems to be having one of the biggest LGBTQRSTUV parades. parades.
Yeah.
I mean, so what is Israel like? Are they wrestling with spirituality? And
Well, it's in a way, if you think a good way to start is to think Middle East, because Israel, although it's disguised as a first world country, think Iran, Iraq, Syria, Israel, all these places are part ancient buildings, ancient infrastructure, ancient, not castles, but Palace of David. And so you've got these ancient people for 4,000 years, and they've been very disconnected from anything. So you have suddenly a surge of technology here in Israel, but that brings with it a thing that people are starting to look and to say, who is Yeshua? At the same time, they're saying, what is the gay lifestyle? Or they're trying to find out whatever they can find out. The biggest thing Israel doesn't want is to be totally disconnected and ostracized. So they'll do anything to not have another Holocaust. It's like a trauma. So they'll say, I'll please everybody. I'm a man pleaser. I'll do anything to connect with everybody and make everybody happy. I'll fly 100 flags just to show that I'm totally, getting along. And we won't destroy the Dome of the Rock. We won't. We'll let the Buddhists in. We'll let anyone in. Mm-hmm. We just want to prove how cordial we are. But you can't do that. You have to focus on what God has called you, or you'll come under some serious judgment in the past time. Now, we won't be kicked out again, I don't believe, because this is according to Amos chapter 9. When you look at the end of the chapter there, verse 14 and 15, and it talks about we will never be kicked out of the land that God has given us ever again. But there is a process of restoration, a final process. This is the final, this is the last hurrah, the final process of restoration, final process of God's spirit being poured out on all flesh. So it always gets darker before dawn. And certainly darker. We think Tel Aviv's not even part of Israel. It's totally just it's like Miami. I live in the Galilee. Yeah. I live in the Galilee. I live in the north part, the Sea of Galilee. And here, along with people like Joshua Aaron, he's my best friend. And if you don't know his music, you should check it out. You should play it on your radio. Good. So we're hanging out all the time. I was with him last night. And what we do is we're realizing that God has called us both Galileans to be those who, just like Yeshua, he did discipleship in the Galilee. That's what we are here for, is to do discipleship. That's worship. That's prayer. That's preparing the bride. Those white garments, do acts of righteousness. At the same time, those three prerequisites, the three prerequisites, at the same time as preparing the bride, there's also from the Galilee, from Israel, the word goes forth. So these ambassadors, they come and they bring with them the full gospel. They bring with them a gospel that includes, it's not a grass fire, it has roots. It's called a revival that will have no rival. Azusa Street, get ready for Mezuzah Street, which is going to be this revival with no rival till the end of time. So that's why people need to be part of it. So we bring these disciples to the land of discipleship. They get their hands dirty in the soil of Israel. They're able to help Holocaust survivors and hear their stories. They're able to help new immigrants with no home and give them food, clothing, shelter, Hebrew school, business training, as I was saying, teach a man to fish. So they get an experience like no other. But the last thing is they're provoking to jealousy wherever they're from, whether they're a Jew or not Jew. Whether they're Hebrew or not Hebrew, they come, doesn't matter. Everyone has to bless Israel, including Hebrew people, have to bless the Hebrew nation. Mm-hmm. I realize sometimes a disconnect where some people are saying like, well, I'm a Jewish person, I don't care about Israel. I say some Hollywood types are like this, some Jewish Hollywood types. And I'm like, well, Balaam was a Jewish person. Balaam. Yeah. And they're like, curse Israel. He's like, can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it. He's a Jewish person, but he has to bless Israel. He has to learn to bless Israel. And that's what we all have to learn, Jewish or not Jewish. We have to bless Israel as God's plan.
So,
yeah.
You know, many times during it was the COVID episode that helped many people realize that they needed to start putting their trust in the name Yahweh or Hashem.
Amen.
And quit believing in governments. Is that happening within Israel? Because I know that government's a big deal over there. Government keeps you guys pretty safe and centered. But, they were responsible for a lot of travesties to the people over there. So was it a good faith journey?
It certainly has been, because a lot of people who were protesting have just kind of come to this understanding of, guess what? We can't trust in God. In fact, I've done a Trump rally here in Israel, and one up to the embassy and one in the Galilee to Trump Heights in the Golan Heights, which is this little tiny town at the top of the Golan Heights, Trump Heights. So I've done that. Love Trump. I've met Mike Pence myself personally, and he's a wonderful guy, whatever. Point is that I realized, you know what? I need to repent for just trusting in anyone, trusting in Netanyahu, trusting in any human of any kind, as nice as they are. No, we're not here to trust in any humans. We are the kingdom of God. We're here to displace principalities and to advance the kingdom of light, the kingdom of God. King, and as Yeshua said, cast out demons. And that's what we're here to do, not put faith in any person of any kind. What if said person gets sick? What if said person's healthy? You know, it's like no people, no matter how nice they are, that's not our call, is to trust in people or governments. And so many here who love Netanyahu so much, and then he was out, and the country kind of went into a bit of a tailspin. He wasn't perfect either. And now we have our nice Naftali Bennett is going to be out as of literally now.
It looks like we're
going to go to an election in a month, I think, or I think it's a month. We'll go to another election, and I guess it'll be Yair Lapid's turn, perhaps. Will he take us farther down a globalization kind of path, or will he take us more back to we know where we're going to go in the end. That's the point.
Yes.
We know we're outpour of the Lord's Spirit, and the believers will arise, and miracles and signs, and two witnesses show up, and all that.
So,
So
how safe is it for people to come over there as a volunteer, or should they be worried about that?
Well, don't be offended, but it's safer statistically, I'm proven, than any major American city. So if anyone goes to any American city in America or drives on ice, even with ice tires, if they do that, they don't be hypocrites. It's way safer to come here than drive with snow tires on snow. All right.
Okay, so take us through, you know, quickly, like the process. If a person wants to come to Aliyah Return Center, what's the process like?
So one just can go to – so we have we have two sides of our charity. One side is just focused on here's some goods to poor people. Here's a training session for them to get into their job. Here's this, here's that. That's one side. And the other side is the Faithful Galileans. Faithful Galileans is they go there. They find the form called thefaithfulgalileans.com. They go there and they click on the form, you know, serve in Israel. And then they fill out that form and they say, I want to come for a month. I want to come for your school. Now, I'll just be honest. It is an expensive country. Forbes magazine and stuff. You saw Tel Aviv is the most expensive city in the world.
Really?
So I just got to be honest with that. Yeah, that was on the I think The Economist as well. Mm-hmm. Tel Aviv is the most expensive city in the world. It doesn't mean that you pay the most out. I think you pay the most out in somewhere in Asia. But what you earn versus what you have to pay, it's like sandwich is $20. And you're earning $19, so that's it. And so I'm like, man. So people got to know, we have a school, which we made it rock bottom price, $2,500 for an entire month with us. They're in the prayer room. They're praying. They're going to the mountains and praying on the borders. They're helping to serve. They're helping to work. They're coming in through the Ambassador Academy, meeting the best teachers Israel has to offer, doing for the believers. You know, the best believer teachers, learning the wars of Israel. We have four pillars: pioneering in the past, present, future, government, past, present, future, from Ezra, Nehemiah, till 120 seats in the upper room, to 120 seats in the government, to the outpour of God's Spirit with righteous leadership. So military, and also, of course, faith, last but not least. Four pillars, past, present, future. People love it. Their lives are changed. $2,500 for a month. I think people should just say, wow, that's the best deal. They're saving money, actually.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And so we've seen people's lives change in the last decade that we've been doing this. And now that Israel's completely, totally open, it's time to get back into we have a group coming now in July, and we want to fill up September. There's still places left. So, again, they just go to Faithful Galileans, and they'll see our learn, you know, stay, pray, learn, serve aspect. AliyahReturnCenter.com is just the aspect of helping the poor and needy type thing.
I love it. Chaim, you have been a superb blessing for us here today, and I would just want to thank you for coming on with us. It's just – I love it. We're going to be – pushing this with people from now on, because this is the best place for people to go to, I think, right?
It is. I think there's two places that are amazing, Jerusalem and Galilee, and our school covers both. Other people, if they want to go and find out stuff in Haifa or Be'er Sheva or other places, they can do that on their own. But we take people to the best areas around Galilee and around Jerusalem, including Dead Sea and Masada. But it's not a tour. It's a fully equipping for leaders. And I'll just say this before we end, is leaders have to be equipped. If you drop a leader in a leadership role, even as a pastor, he's going to come under fire. And as soon as you're talking about Israel, if the person isn't trained and a young person that wants to serve the Lord, it's time to give them the tools they need. These people need the tools to be able to stand strong in these times when every kind of attack will come against Israel, against the family, against the Bible. And here they get all those tools. They say a week in Israel is a month in seminary or something.
Yeah, so, I bet.
So it's fun. And we do have a lot of fun. Well.
Yeah, and I think the idea of being there a month is so much better than just let's show up for a week and see some pretty little sights, jump in a bus and leave. I mean, it sounds like you're actually immersing people to actually feel Israel, to actually feel the land. And that's, man, just way to go.
So yeah. I can send you guys the 64 Aliyah scriptures. The great physician prescribes one a day taken in the morning with water for a healthy prophetic lifestyle. That's 64 Aliyah scriptures, the promises that we've got to fulfill, we've got to be part of fulfilling to be the sheep nations. I believe it's to be the sheep nations. So I can send that to you. You can send it on to anyone who wants, if you'd like. And, of course, they can just go to AliyahReturnCenter.com. So that's Aliyah, A-L-I-Y-A-H, Aliyah, ReturnCenter.com. And they will then, of course, be able to get engaged in this time. As the enemy's pushing, God's pushing back, and I think we are part of the pushback.
I love it. Yeah, I would definitely want to see those texts. I mean, that's just amazing to me. Kaim, you know what? Your voice sounds really young. I mean,
He's at least 30.
38, yeah, 38 now. Got the white hair. Damn. Got the white hair and everything. Didn't have the white hair before we started. And, of course, as a sergeant major in the Army who's commanded in different wars and stuff, too, I realized, man, I have more white hair than my older brother. You know? Oh, more white hair. Got a lot of white hair. But it's three kids. Deanna's from Canada originally. Got Hadar, Matia, and Nadav. Three kids, a dog, Mishmish. 12 people on our team, which is an interesting number. That just sort of happened. 12 Galilean disciples here in this ministry. Yeah.
Well, Kaim, thanks. Thank you again for coming on with us, and thank you for having the patience as we work through some technical difficulties today. So we would love to get you on at another time again. Hey. So let's stay in touch, okay?
Anytime, anytime. Lots of stories to tell.
I'd love it.
Be blessed.
Salam.
Thank you so much, guys. Blessings. Okay.
I just love that story. I love his enthusiasm.
Yeah.
What's his last name?
I don't have that in front of me, but I will get that for you in just a moment, because I got to keep all those names straight.
Yeah,
you know. But it's just amazing to hear the energy that he has and the enthusiasm for that land. You know, he reminds me of a Joshua or Caleb that we were reading about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go, man. Yeah. You know, we shouldn't wait.
Yeah, Yahweh's on our side. All we have to do is trust and obey, and move forward in the direction that he's sent us.
Right. And then do it.
Yeah.
You know, what an undertaking, you know, cause I love this vision of, you know, let's bring people over, let's help them settle in. We're going to be, I mean, think about it. Like if you go over there and you want to Aliyah and you want to immerse yourself in the land, but you have no connections.
Right.
I mean, this is the perfect way to do it.
Yeah, I went several years back, 2003, I went back to Washington, D.C. and New York. Went by myself, wanted to go see some of the sites. I knew some of the stuff. But, you know, I learned a lot on that just going by myself. It was like a long weekend. I don't remember how many, 4 or 5 days, something like that. And I could just imagine had I gone with somebody that had all the information about, hey, here's this thing, here's these things, here's the information about what this is, the difference that would have made and how much I would have learned in that. So, you know, when he's talking about, yeah, we take you to these sites and, you know, the energy that he has and the knowledge about all of these places, oh, my goodness, how much you're going to learn.
$2,500 for a month?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I mean, you can't even find a tour over there $2,500 for a week.
For a week.
I mean, this.
is insane. Okay,
so Chaim, C-H-A-I-M, male spin. Now, if I do it right for Tuck, it'd be male spin.
It's supposed to be male spin.
M-A-I-L?
Male spin.
M-A-I-L spin.
M-A-M-A-L-E.
L-E.
S-P-I-N. Chaim Melspin.
Could be Melspin.
Melspin. You know?
And Chaim was C-H-A-I-M?
And, well, this
I'm asking if that is C-H-A-I-M?
C-H-A-I-M.
Okay, so there's no Y in there.
And if, right. And if people go to ARC, or Aliyah Return Center, you're going to see a video, and Chaim is promoting this video on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's a great video. I'm sitting there watching it right now. It's just fun. It's a great way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You actually get to see the center. You get to see him walking you through things. And
nice.
Wow.
He's really paying attention to you and I, Aaron, so while he's watching.
Right, while he's watching and talking.
I am learning to be multidimensional.
Multitasking.
Oh, yeah.
Multitasking.
You've always been multidimensional. Kind of like delusional, but in more than one dimension.
I am. I'm in more than one dimension.
On the Aliyah Return Center website, uh-huh. And he said, yeah, you have to donate here, you get involved, you can pray, and the Ambassador Academy is all on there. But there's an image on here of a guy sleeping on the street.
Yeah.
Because it says 1/3 of new immigrants in Israel live in poverty today.
Really?
And that's according to the Israeli Department of Statistics. Yeah. So that's a, you know, a country figure that they're giving out.
Yeah, he was telling us that if people came over to do this, Aliyah, mm-hmm. they would face depression and suicide because they're not integrating.
They're not getting the support to get integrated, yeah.
Yeah. So this is get involved with this. I'm so glad we have a young lady going over there soon.
Yeah.
That'll be neat. Duty versus desire is how we started out today.
You know, I think I'm adjusting my
viewpoint?
Thought on it.
Okay.
That it's one or the other. That's where I was. It was either you're in desire or you're in duty.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm adjusting that of either you're. I think that desire is part of duty, but it's not always the favorite part of your desire. You know, World War II time, there was a lot of men who went to war, right?
Mm-hmm. It was their duty.
It was their duty. They were called up to do it. But they served because their desire for
freedom,
for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to have to shoot other people.
No.
But they knew that their desire required them to do a little bit of the duty of serving in war. And so they go hand in hand, but it's not always the fun part of what your desire is.
I think I got to find this text. Okay, this is amazing. Let me look it up. I'll find it here in just a minute, but maybe Tuck knows it. But the Lord promises us to give us the desires of our heart. But along with that, as you can see, there's a duty to actually follow Yahweh.
Yeah.
When we follow Yahweh, the desires of our heart are actually given.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's so amazing. Psalms 37:4.
The darkness must flee, the dark darkness must flee.